Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 10 minutes after 9 a.m., starting a little bit late. We had a committee of the whole budgetary meeting with the university here just preceding this. Today is March 12th, 2009. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, myself, Senator Stedman. Senator Huggins will not be joining us today. He's been called away for a few days, and he'll be joining us again Monday. Today we have one issue on the agenda. It's Senate Joint Resolution Number 9, Constitutional Amendment, Dividend Stabilization. And what we're going to be talking about here is the beginning of a process that will probably go on into next legislative session as we take a look at the permanent fund and the dividends and that it spins off and how we want to handle that. And this is the first hearing. We're just going to have a presentation of the resolution, take a little bit of public testimony if there's some call-ins, and then we're going to set this aside for a future date. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and call Mr. Darwin Peterson, trustees, staff, forward. He'll go ahead and walk through the brief presentation today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Darwin Peterson, staff to Senator Stedman. Go ahead and, as requested, walk through the PowerPoint presentation that we've set up for today. As an introduction to SJR 9, we affectionately refer to as the Dividend Stabilization Plan.
Well, before you begin, just want to remind everybody we have a floor at 10 o'clock, so this will be a fairly short meeting today.
Thank you. This first slide, Mr. Chairman, is an excerpt from State Statutes AS 3713020. When the permanent fund statutes were originally adopted, legislative findings enacted in this section of statute said that the fund should provide a means of conserving a portion of the state's revenue from mineral resources to benefit all generations of Alaska. And it's that idea that the fund should benefit all generations of Alaska that this idea has been resurrected and brought to the table. The next slide, the question is asked, is the fund broken? Only part of the fund is protected from inflation, the principal. Of course, the earnings are not inflation-proofed. How is this current method broken? It allows overspending in good years. In some years, up to 20% of the fund has been available for appropriation. It creates the possibility of reduced or zero payouts for dividends or other purposes in bad years. Only the principal of the fund is inflation-proofed by a statutory annual appropriation. And payouts are now based on realized income and are incompatible with the fund's current investments. This next slide demonstrates the change in the fund's asset allocation over time. When the fund was created, it was invested entirely in bonds, and a payout method that was based on realized income made sense at that time. Now that payout method is outdated because the fund is invested in stocks, real estate, other asset classes in addition to just bonds. Assets that increase in value as well as provide some cash income. The fund's current portfolio would be more compatible with a payout based on the fund's market value. The dangers of overspending. Overspending in good years means there will be no cushion for down years. Overspending can decrease a fund's benefit to future generations. An annual spending limit of no more than 5% of the total value of the fund will protect the entire fund from overspending. This next slide, Mr. Chairman, shows actual numbers for FY08, a comparison between a 5% spending limit versus the current method of allocating the earnings. Under the current method, 81% of the fund is constitutionally protected. $7.1 billion, or 19%, in the earnings account is available to this legislature as can be appropriated. Under the 5% spending limit, 95% of the permanent fund would be constitutionally protected. So this graph shows the danger of being able to overspend. Each legislature has that decision to make. The next slide, titled Payout Source Volatility. This slide shows the percent of change from year to year comparing the market value versus the realized income. The orange line, Mr. Chairman, is the annual market value of the whole fund. That is a pretty static line and doesn't change very much because there's little percent change from year to year in the value of the fund as a whole. The green line, however, is the realized income, which is what the fund uses to determine the dividend distribution amounts. And you'll see how volatile and erratic that line can be. Under a percent of market value dividend stabilization plan, that line would become much more static, similar to the annual market value of the fund. What is the answer? Changing the spending limit for the permanent fund to an endowment-like payout method based on market value. Under the dividend stabilization plan, no more than 5% of the fund's market value may be withdrawn each year. Inflation proofing is inherent and no longer requires an appropriation by the legislature. Under the current system, all realized earnings are available for spending from the fund. How the dividend stabilization plan works. 8% is the projected average annual return on investments. 3% would be retained in the fund for inflation proofing, and then 5% can be used by the legislature as the maximum annual payout. Is it really 5%? This slide just shows you how the amount would be calculated under the dividend stabilization plan. Currently, we calculate the last five fiscal years, take an average of that. Under this plan, it would be the first five of the preceding six fiscal years. So there would be a one-year buffer when they're figuring out the average. But if you look at the average, those 5 years, the average amount is $32 billion, the value of the fund. 5% of that average is $1.6 billion. Well, the current year, and these are hypothetical numbers, Mr. Chairman, this is just for an example. The current year value of the fund at $36 billion, 5% of that is more than $1.6 billion. So it doesn't always equal exactly 5%. It's 5% average of the first five from the preceding six fiscal years. This is the last slide, Mr. Chairman, and this is just showing the committee who else uses this type of payout method. Most fund trustees and managers around the country use this type of a payout method. Anchorage, Fairbanks, North Slope Borough, and Sitka residents have voted to limit spending based on a percent of the market value of municipal trust accounts. Private foundations are required by the IRS to pay out at least 5% of their market value. And 83% of colleges and university endowments use a payout method based on a percent of market value. That concludes the presentation this morning, Mr. Chairman. We do have Mr. Mike Burns from the Permanent Fund Corporation here in the audience to help with questions. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
I think what I'll do is go ahead and ask Mr. Burns to come forward and maybe before we have questions, because we'll have him walk through one of the spreadsheets that was included in the packet from the permanent fund. And it's,
do you have a PowerPoint?
It's in your packet. It's
Mr. Chairman, we don't have it on PowerPoint, but it's right. Looks like this for the members of the committee. It's in their packets.
I may need to borrow it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike Burns, Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. These are some projections that we have put together, and I would very strongly like to say that with a caveat, they are they're changing all the time. They're very fluid. What we're looking at for this fall right now. This was a week or so ago, but about $967 million dividend, which would equate to about $1,512 per person. Again, that is subject to change. We are adjusting the portfolio. We change out managers. Unfortunately, in times like this, when the market's down, it also makes a little more apparent sometimes the managers that aren't carrying their load, and so you're faced with the situation of changing them out, you know, during difficult times. That realizes some losses. You also have losses that can come from rebalancing. Basically, when the fund is down, you have unrealized losses. Any activity that you have realizes losses. So these are subject to change. You will see that by the fall of 2010, that number is down dramatically from this year. Actually, it probably is going to be less than that. I mean, with some of the activity that's going on, it's hard to plan. But
if you could, Mr. Burns, repeat the numbers for the folks at home that are watching, because we don't have this on the screen.
Okay. For right now, the best estimate we have is $967 million for the dividend this fall, and that would, based on an assumption of about the same number of applications, that would be about $1,500 a person. That's compared to about $1.3 billion last year. By 2010, that number estimated right now is $561 million. Again, that could change and probably will change with activities that we go through, and probably won't change for the better. I mean, the market's just not going to work that way for us, and the unrealized losses, we have to work through those first.
Yeah, maybe you could stop and just kind of explain to the committee when there is built up unrealized losses, how they're dealt with over time as you march forward 2, 3, 4 years, and with your normal portfolio turnover and normal balancing.
Well,
in a generic sense,
a good number or a good estimate of turnover in the portfolio is maybe about 30%. So you might be realizing a third or thereabouts of unrealized losses just on an ongoing basis. But what aggravates that is when you have the value of the fund changing the way it has, and you have rebalancing, which is kind of an external, that's different than just your normal turnover. And then, as I said, when the market's down, it shows some flaws in some of the managers. I think Warren Buffett said, when the tide goes out, you find out who's swimming without a bathing suit. We do have some of that, so you're changing out managers. We're also moving some of our actively managed assets to passive accounts. So all of those create that activity that create the realization of losses. And in this committee, probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had the capital markets presentation from Callan Associates, Mr. O'Leary, and just to kind of put in perspective what we've been going through, he had a histogram that he brought forward that had, I believe, 218 years of U.S. stock market performance. And 2008 was one of the five worst years out of 218. You could say that maybe falls into the black swan category. Did that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, it does. And then if you could walk us through the next 3 or 4 years of projections. And I'd just like to remind the committee as we go forward, over the next year, we'll have the permanent fund do some more modeling with, because this is fairly static, and we'll go ahead and have them give us some projections on different, you know, if markets go up by 10% or lay flat or go down by 5%, or so the committee has kind of a risk profile of what's facing us on the upside or the downside as we work through this. But so this is just kind of an introductory introduction or preliminary introduction into the subject matter.
Yeah, let me just and these assumptions are built after this year based assume an 8% growth rate of the fund and 20% asset turnover, which may be a little light. But that takes, again, this year, $967 million dividend. That would go to $561 in 10. And 2011, it drops to $188 million. And $254 the following year, down to $79 million the year after that. The farther out, actually, even beyond this year, you're getting into quite a bit of speculation with the volatility that we have in the market. I think when we were in here before, we spoke about just how we've had back-to-back days of over $700 million up and down. I think it was 1971, I believe was the year. It's the first time the Dow Jones Industrials went over 1,000. We've had a day with a range of 1,000 in the marketplace just within the last year. Just Tuesday, we made a market rally. I think we're up $650 million. We need a lot more days like that. We're not counting on those right now. So we can do any scenario you want, but they will be, you know, estimates, but they will give you the ranges, I think, that you're looking for. But I think you can see the effect on these, that the unrealized earnings that we have and have to work through, even if the markets do start to move upwards. It's going to take some time to work through this.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I think the most staggering is the swing in the dividends under the current program. You look out for the 10 years in fiscal year 2013, the dividend could drop as low as $68. And the high in 2018 of $1,077, and then under the proposed plan, you know, and that is a big swing of $1,700 during the course of the 10 years. But you look at under the dividend stabilization plan, it fluctuates from. In 2014, from $779 as the low compared to $68, to this year of $1,512, or a swing of only $373. So there's a lot more consistency in stabilizing the dividends. And the other telltale point that shows the difference is the total over 10 years. In 10 years under the current plan, individuals would receive a little bit over $9,000, and under the stabilization plan, individuals would receive right around $12,900. So to me, it if in fact we move to this dividend stabilization plan, not only will the dividends be stabilized, but in the long run, the individuals will get a larger check.
Okay. Go ahead and continue, Mr. Burns.
Yep, just, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Hoffman's point, that extreme volatility is a function of the 5 years, because you got such differences in performance. You're going to have these negative years. Once those drop out, even a modest up year will change the formula dramatically. And we actually went through that the last 2 years when we had two very poor years drop off and in terms of realized income. And so that the formula in volatile times will swing around dramatically, because you'll have a negative year being replaced by a positive year, and it will swing it around, as the senator said. I guess the one question that came up before the meeting and is where is the board on this issue, and I think we should say, you know, the last position the board had on this, and it's, I don't believe the board has voted on this or revisited at least in 4 years or actively, was they were support of a methodology, a payout methodology such as this. We have not revisited it. We really didn't think it was worth spending time because, you know, people here in the legislature were not very interested, and so it's been dormant. And only two of our current members on the board today have ever voted on this issue. So although it's on the table, the resolution is on the table in support of it, I just think it's fair to think that the board, this board, would want to rethink through all of this. And I don't know where they would come out on that or one way or the other, but it is a different board.
Well, maybe what... how about if we ask the board to go ahead and take a look at the subject matter over the next several months, through the winter and into the fall, because we're not going to be taking any action, is the intent anyway, this legislative session. And maybe there's other options available for us to consider too. But clearly, I think there's a concern that we come up with something that stabilizes the dividend stream for the overall health of the economy of the state, because it is a big economic stimulus every fall for the state. And we're certainly open to suggestions from the board.
Senator, I didn't mean to leave the impression they've been entirely silent on this. We've had discussions, but not with any conclusion or much depth, because we really didn't think it was, I guess, a live issue, if you will. But I think the board will become very actively involved with this, you know, resolution that has been introduced today or previously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But go ahead and continue. Unless you're...
I guess I would...
stop there?
Yeah, stop there and be open for questions.
Well, what I'd like you to do is just maybe spin the... take about 30 seconds or 45 seconds and let the Finance Committee members kind of know what your thoughts are on the earnings reserve account, which we have the ability to appropriate from, and you know, if we have a natural disaster or some other budgetary shock. Clearly we have a lot of cash today, but we do have a burn rate of that cash. In the past, we've always had, for quite some time, we've always had the ability to look over and see the permanent fund as of the last fallback before we have to take some, you know, drastic measures if we do need emergency appropriations. And what kind of position is the permanent fund in today, and today meaning, you know, this budgetary cycle, or, you know, the next 3 or 4 years to come to the aid of the state if we do have a natural disaster or some unforeseen shutdown for an extended time of the gas or the oil line?
Mr. Chair, between what we anticipate this 2010 dividend to be, what we anticipate the inflation-proofing appropriation to be, and some estimates of adjustments to the portfolio for the balance of the year, there's not going to be much to deal with. I think this projection we have here that's a month or so old right now, showing the amount of the dividend in 2010 may be quite optimistic. So I think we're using this up pretty quickly. I can't give you an exact burn rate, but I think when we were here before, I think you've heard from the Department of Law on their interpretation of the availability of the earnings reserve for appropriation, but it is going to be used up.
So
within the next the balance of this year and 2010 or the bulk of it, it's not going to be much of a backstop for
you. So 2 years from now, if we're having budgetary challenges at the table because, you know, again, unforeseen economic shock to the state, and my co-chair here, Senator Hoffman, has to meet his operating account obligations and picks up the phone and calls you up. Says, Mr. Permanent Fund Chairman, I need a check for $1 billion. Can you produce it?
Well, the markets, Mr. Chair, the markets would have to turn around very dramatically for that to happen in the near term. I'm not sure exactly when your question, how far out, but I think over the next 2 years, we're going to be a very limited resource for that kind of a call.
And is 2 years, looking at your diagram here, looks like that might be a little on the optimistic side to be able to rely on the permanent fund as a fallback position.
Mr. Chair, when we make projections, we have to make some assumptions, and as I said, the 8% earnings rate and the 20% turnover are what drive those numbers. We can give you other scenarios. This seemed like a good mid-case. Long term, we'd like to think the fund can earn a 5%, real rate of return, but that may be subject to be revisiting also. Previously, in discussions, the board, in their support of a distribution method such as is envisioned in your plan today, talked about a 5% number. I think if part of the discussion the board might have in light of a change in capital markets is that the right number? And I have no answer for that, but I think that's, not only would we or not support a distribution method like this or not, but also what is the correct number? So I think there's a lot of questions for the board.
Just for clarity, there's basically there's more than one issue on the table. One of them, which is the capping the maximum payout, and this initial draft is at 5%, would be the max that could be drawn, and that doesn't necessarily mean that is the amount that should be drawn every year, but at some point there's got to be protection of the permanent fund. So that 5% is put in there. We also have the fiscal stability of the state issue at hand, and I know the rating agencies look to the permanent fund as the fallback position for the state in case we get into financial difficulty. So there is some interest in not removing that from the equation, because that would lower, all else being equal, lower our bond ratings and make it more difficult for us in the capital markets.
Mr. Chair, yes, I guess it's a year ago. I'm trying to think when the pension obligation bonds were first being discussed, and the rating agencies were here in Juneau to discuss, the state's finances. But they spent a great deal of time with us just exactly on that issue. So they're very interested in what we are, how we do what we do, and what might be available to the state.
And then if you could just briefly touch on the per person dividend under the stabilization plan, or which is the term we're using here. Permanent fund uses another term. Is that not one half of the 5%?
That is one half of 5% distribution. Yes, it is. I'm sorry. Yes, I meant to mention that earlier.
So back to Senator Hoffman's question, over the period of 10 years, I guess it is, or 9 years, that total payout of 12,009, we would, if we were to pay out the entire 5%, and I'm certainly not advocating that, but it would be available for uses, would be almost 26,000 compared to 9. Would that not be correct?
The dividend, the total dividend would be, you're saying, between 9,000 and 12,008?
Right, but the 12,008 is only half of the maximum
right.
We can pay out.
Yeah, I think the number that would be available, if you look at the number that's left over, it would be the 8.721 billion. The dividend's half, the other half is obviously the same. So that's what would be in a earnings reserve account, if you will, or available.
Right. I know it's in the private discussions we've had with different members, or I've had with the different chairmen, and along with the current chairman and different members of the Finance Committee for the last few years, we've talked about how nice it is to have $1 billion or $2 billion or laying around in the earnings reserve or the permanent fund just in case we do get into a jam. And that's before we had this huge swell of revenue the last 2 years. So it's just a comfort cushion that is no longer there. Questions, Senator Hoffman?
Unrelated to this, while you're here, has there been any discussion, Mr. Burns, on the permanent fund investing in energy projects specifically? I know there's been some discussion about the gas line, but what about the bullet line?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, there is a bill that's been introduced in the House that I believe authorizes us to invest up to $1 billion in in-state energy projects. We have the authority, if in fact it was prudent, to do that. The current statutes allow us to invest in in-state projects if in fact they meet the same risk reward thresholds as other projects. So, you know, whether now maybe it was introduced because of the size, it wasn't something we requested. But it is, I don't know if it's moving through the House, it has been introduced in the House.
Okay. We have any other questions? I've got one person online. We will go to the one fellow online. Jason Brune. Mr. Brune, if you could introduce yourself and who you represent for the record and speak to the resolution at hand, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Jason Bruni, and I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. And it's on behalf of RDC today that I'm testifying in support of SJR 9, which amends the Constitution of the State of Alaska to establish a percent of market value approach as a means of distribution from the permanent fund in order to protect it for future generations of Alaskans. RDC is a statewide, nonprofit, membership-funded organization founded in 1975. The RDC membership is comprised of individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fisheries industries, as well as Alaska Native corporations, local communities, organized labor, and industry support firms. RDC's purpose is to link these diverse interests together to encourage a strong, diversified private sector in Alaska and expand the state's economic base through the responsible development of our natural resources. RDC's Board of Directors has supported the POMV approach for some time. Indeed, the Board of the Permanent Fund has also endorsed this concept since 2000, having passed three resolutions supporting similar amendments like SJR 9 over the years. These three resolutions came in 2000 under the chair of Clark Greening, 2003, Eric Wolferth was the chair, and 2004, Carl Brady was the chair. The POMV approach is currently used by many large endowments and public trusts, and if enacted for the permanent fund, it will balance the goal of maximizing the availability of income from the fund with the long-term goal of protecting its value through inflation proofing. Ultimately, the POMV approach will simplify how the permanent fund is distributed, making it a lot more understandable to Alaskans. It will eliminate the confusing distinction between principal and earnings and provide for the option of an annual distribution through dividends. All the while, it will provide a means of conserving a portion of the state's revenues from mineral resources in order to benefit future generations of Alaskans. Though RDC has historically supported using some of the distribution of the permanent fund to help fund state government, we support this current approach of not tying the constitutional amendment and the POMV concept to how the money is used, be it for dividends, funding public services, or otherwise. I encourage the committee to vote in favor of this amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska so that we can protect the permanent fund for future generations of Alaskans. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. And just to remind folks at home, we're not taking any action on this. We're just putting the concern of the potential extremely low dividend in 2013 could be somewhere around $100 per individual. on the table so we can work on a solution. We have any further questions? Or Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Well, Mr. Burns is here. I have a not related to this resolution, but a question about the Permanent Fund Board's decisions in the past. It's my understanding the Permanent Fund Board has Kellen and Associates as your principal advisor, and the State Retirement Board also has Kellen as their principal advisor. Is that correct? How does it possibly make sense that both boards, both major boards, major entities of the state, employ the same advisor? I mean, Kellen got it wrong, and lots of financial advisors across the country got it very wrong leading up to this financial crash. But how does it make sense for the permanent, and I know you can't speak for the retirement board, but how is it good judgment for the Permanent Fund Board and the retirement board to employ the same financial advisor? Wouldn't it make more sense for us to have more diversity in our financial advice to the major entities of the state? And that's really not hindsight, that's foresight, I would think.
Senator Ellis, through the chair, just to maybe add on to your question, Kellen is also the principal advisor or investment consultant for the University of Alaska Foundation, for Anchorage, Fire and Police, I think for the municipalities of Anchorage, Permanent Fund, and I'm not sure what other organizations around state. I mean, they're very active here in the state. We've been pleased. They've been our consultant for, I had this number the other day, somebody asked, over 20 years. This business is about firms, but it's more about the people that you have on your account, and we have the highest regard for Kellen and very high regard for Mr. O'Leary, who you've interacted with here. To your question, your specific question, would a second opinion, would another opinion, would we benefit with two points of view? You know, so both major funds of the state aren't zigging at the same time when somebody ought to be going the other direction. This is a slow-moving, evolving business. Asset allocation moves at a glacial pace. We're going through the capital markets assumptions right now, and we'll look at our asset allocation in May. But these are rarely revolutionary. So, the difference between a Kellen and an Enniskanup, or I'm trying to think of other ones that we have in our pool. They're marginally different, but not a lot of people have big differences of opinion about what the asset mix ought to be. So I don't, you know, there might be some, and I guess, in my opinion, there might be a marginal benefit. There could also be a marginal detriment. But there's not a lot of daylight. When we went through the last RFP for our general consultant, we were very pleased with the results we got from the three finalists. And I think the primary thing was the experience we'd had, and the experience Kellen had had with us was really the telling thing. It wasn't that they had a better view of the world than the other two. It was slightly different, but as I said, slightly different. So I think it's...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say to Mr. Burns, from his responsibility for his portfolio, you know, this may make sense, but from the legislative perspective, looking at all these state entities and entities beyond the state, having all of our eggs in one basket, you know, may not be the wisest course. I think the legislature benefits from a diversity of opinion and advice and trying to, you know, bring that together and make the best decisions possible. It saps my confidence to have all of the advice coming from one entity. And now we have the disturbing news that Mercer, the firm that we had a very bad experience with and have sued because of their incompetence, their bad judgment, they're acquiring your primary advisor now. How can that be a good development for the state of Alaska? Has it given you any second thoughts about employing Callan, if they're in fact taken over by Mercer?
Senator, through the chair, we had that discussion. We are comfortable at this point. We're more concerned. The Mercer issue was on their actuarial side, which is, you know, we don't deal with at all. But it is the same firm. It's the same parent firm, and their divisions and that. We're concerned. Our primary concern is, will this change Callan? And our assessment at this point is no, because if you think of the type of business that Mercer is buying, all they're buying are the relationships. All they're buying are the goodwill that they have with their existing clients. So if they would try to change the way the business is done, you disrupt those patterns. You have a very large chance of driving people to start looking other places. So at this point, we're very curious to see if it will change their methodologies or their business methods. So that's where we are right now.
So how would that come before the board for discussion? I mean, will you present to the board the question of remaining with Callan once Mercer takes over? How would that come up before the board for you all to revisit that relationship?
Well, actually, our Callan contract is up for renewal at the end of June, and we talked, and it's a one-year renewal, and I think it's the last 1 year, and then we'd be out for an RFP anyway a year from June. I believe it's the last year. The feeling was, and generally we bring it forward at the February meeting, which we did, and said, look, this contract is coming due. Do you have anything difference of opinion right now? And it was a matter of days before the February board meeting, I mean, maybe 1 or 2 days, that the Mercer announcement came up. And the board said, let's go ahead with the renewal, you know, in June, and let's see how this develops. Now, I would caution you that all of our contracts, with whether it be with Callan or investment managers, no matter what the contract said, are cancelable at will by us at any time. So I mean, so we're not locking ourselves in. If something doesn't go the way we want, or if business conditions develop differently, but our contracts are very one-sided in our favor that way. Mm-hmm.
Well, that could be an advantage. That's probably a good thing. But is it, just finally, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your indulgence, there was no one on the Permanent Fund Board had any pause with the announcement that Mercer, and I don't need to rehash for members at this table, the bad experience we've had with that firm. And I would say bad judgment, incompetence, bad advice. It couldn't get any worse than what we've experienced with Mercer, and it's been the subject of enormous amount of time by this committee and the chairman in particular, with the retirement disaster, the unfunded liability, and the bad advice the bad advice that we received from Mercer. So nobody on the Permanent Fund Board had any pause with the announcement that Mercer is taking over your primary financial advisor.
Senator Ellis, through the chair. I guess when you say had any pause, we discussed it, okay. But we're not a party to that litigation. We don't really know much about it at all, other than what we read in the paper. I'm not even sure actually what some of the elements of it are, other than just about at the level that you just described them. So, but we are very cognizant and very aware, and are going to be very vigilant about any changes in our relationship, in the reporting relationship. One of the things potentially that this brings to us that we haven't had is Callan does not have international consulting experience. They're not authorized to do business. Mercer is. The combined entity will be the largest in the country. That remains to be seen whether that's good or bad for us. But we are certainly keeping an eye on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis isn't alone in his concern, especially having one advisor for both the permanent fund and then our retirement portfolios, because it does lead to one voice at the table over expectations, and it's always nice to have different viewpoints. Senator Olson and Senator Thomas.
Just a simple question on a follow-up of Senator Ellis. Has it ever been a time where the board or the management of the permanent fund has ever canceled a contract on short notice because of underperformance?
Senator Olson, through the chair, yes. Yeah. Not with Callan. Sure. But, you know, we do it all, not all the time, but with our investment managers. Okay. And it's not just, oftentimes it's not underperformance that causes us, you know, that's sometimes an indicator of other problems. A firm that's underperforming may well overperform in a different cycle, but it can be issues, business issues. We're concerned about the finances of a manager. There's a thing that's fairly common in the investment management business. It's called a lift out, where they'll come and hire some other firm, will come to a firm and hire the whole team. And all of a sudden we're without our team or without our team leader or the people that we interact with. So I would say as often as not, we are concerned to cancel a contract like that over non-performance issues, but business or financial interest.
Having been on the Finance Committee for a number of years, I voiced the same concern, grave concerns that Senator Ellis just voiced.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We all have the same concerns, and I guess you hit on the point there at the end, the idea that we'd all like to be able to go back and would have liked to have had one of those that did maybe better in the downturn, but since it's so global, it's pretty difficult to accept that you would have made any difference. But it is, as you said, I think the relationship between the folks that you do business with a particular company, regardless of the company, that you base your relationship on and retain them or look to retain them. So I guess it's more of a comment than a question that you develop that relationship with people and you stick with those that you have confidence in, and it may well have caused you concern that Mercer is buying Callan, but as long as it does not change the makeup of the group that you're doing business with, I'm assuming that you suggest that there's no change to be made.
Senator Thomas, through the chair, yes, that's where we are right now. But I don't want anybody to think we're not keeping an eye on it very carefully. And not just from the perspective, I mean, Mercer is an old friend of mine. He used to be a lawyer for us at the bank. He used to say Mercer's kind of an unhandy fact. But, I mean, if they were acquired by anybody else, you'd want to make sure that business was going to carry on the way that you thought it was, or improve.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, nobody else is on the sign-up sheet, we're going to go ahead and just set this resolution aside. We'll be bringing it back later after the members have some time to think about how they want to try to move forward and protect the dividend for the people. We're open for ideas. We'll have the permanent fund come back before us sometime in the future to help us with that. Monday morning will be the next meeting. There's no meeting tomorrow. Monday, March 16th, 9 a.m. We'll start the process on the capital budget, going through some of the department's capital budget requests. And if members don't have any other questions, we'll adjourn the meeting. Okay, meeting adjourned.